Today on the Inside Flap.
And I thought, well, I'm the person who does worst case scenario stories here. And I had never considered that the fence, in addition to being ugly, was also a kidnapping risk.
No. We didn't, would not have thought that either.
You know, in the neighborhood, I guess. So we didn't think about it. And I said, well, I never would have thought of that. And she said, oh, that's because I was kidnapped as a child. Yeah, I mean, I'm a fun-loving person in real life. I've definitely had people ask me, like, why so dark the story, Lori?
The Inside Flap is available on demand every week on iTunes, Stitcher, the Google Play Store, and around the world on theinsideflap.com.
Podcasting live from Littleton, Colorado. This is the Inside Chat with Dave Medicus. That's me. Seated across the table to my left is Laura Medicus.
Howdy.
Howdy. And when I say to my left, I mean directly to my left. I'm craning my neck.
I got cozy.
We switched our positions a little bit. I had a
that's cold, Dave.
An interview earlier we'll talk about later. But today, we have a conversation with Lori Rader Day to bring to you. Mm-hmm. So excited to bring that to you. Her new book is called The Lucky One, and we'll talk about that in just a second. But I want to tell you guys that today I had to take a sick day because, now let me tell you something. Now, I thought that I would get a student teacher and I would have the life of
you
Riley.
Did. You
I
know
would
what? Be you even around. Worried about, you're like, I don't know if I need to be in the room with her, if I go, I'm not sure what to
Should I go to work? Do I sleep in? Obviously, I have to go to work.
Yeah.
But I thought I'd be sitting in the corner, just reading the book, and just totally relaxing. Well, I actually had to take a sick day because I've been working too damn hard. And let me tell you why. Now, I think it's poor timing because, unfortunately, right now, with a student teacher coming in is great, and she has been great in the classroom, and I had a little time in the beginning, but now we have 1 month to go before the musical, and everything is amping up. So basically now what I do, I go in, I check in with my student teacher, you know, like she's my boss, like I check in, hey, how you doing? Everything good? Okay, great. Then I got to go down the auditorium, and I start working on putting our massive set together. So we've got this elevated platform that goes all the way across the entire length of the stage, and basically, every piece of wood that I pick up gives me a splinter. I mean, look at that. You see all the cuts on my hand right here? So I do that for a little while. And then, what else? Oh, and if I'm not doing that, I'm working on lines with kids all throughout the day. One kid, now listen, I had one kid actually tell me that she wanted to be in the musical the other day. She came up to me, she said this, but she couldn't because she knew she wouldn't be able to memorize her lines because she smokes too much weed. So I've been working with our non-weed smoking cast on memorizing their lines during the day. And then all day yesterday, I was recording the kids performing the backup vocals to all the songs. Now, we wanted to have them have all that on tape so we can play that with a musical tracking, because these kids seem to have a little problem putting the whole singing and dancing together. So if we can record them singing and have the backup vocals on hand just in case. So we were recording that yesterday, you know, and I had a bunch of mics set up in the room. And now I'm off to the corner sitting at my laptop. I got the mixer there. I got my headphones on. And the kids thought, I kept telling them how sensitive the mics were. So they thought it was hilarious to get up there and they would start making lips.
Oh, ASMR noises.
ASMR.
Oh, no.
And doing all that kind of stuff. I was screaming at them, telling them to stop. It's driving me out of my mind.
Every time I
look to my right and tell one kid to stop, and off to my left, I could hear it. Another kid with his words.
I can't stand those noises.
They thought it was hilarious.
I bet.
So I was doing that all day. And then if I'm not doing that, I'm setting the lights up on stage, which is a lot more complicated than it sounds. So basically in the auditorium, this system we have, right? It's a whole rope and pulley with counterweights on it. The system we use to bring the whole line of lights down to the stage so you can fix them well.
Old school.
Yeah, but the main stage lights, now you can't even pull them down. They're stuck there 30 feet above the air. Or in
above
the air.
Above the ground.
In the air. the whole bar with all the lights on it is locked, and you can't lower them down to get at them because years ago, so we had this instrumental, this is before I even got to the school, there's this instrumental music teacher. Mm-hmm. So one day he went to lower the whole lights, right? No. He grabs the rope, and apparently he had taken the counterweights off for some reason.
Oh.
So when he unlocked it and he's got the rope, right, he was going to pull the rope down. As soon as he unlocked it, the lights came flying down. He's got the rope in his hands.
Oh my
He's trying
goodness.
To stop the lights from come crashing down. And as they're careening wildly down towards the stage, his hands, the rope is going through his hands so furiously that it actually ripped all the skin off of his hands and sent him straight to the emergency room.
Wow.
And the reasons it's locked now is because it came down with such a force that the Denver Public School engineers who came out said it did a little structural damage to the beam up there. So they raised them back up, locked them in place, and now I can't get it. The only way I can get at it, now listen to this, here's what I have to do. So we have some 4x8 platforms, and they're basically about 3 feet high, and they're 4 foot by 8 foot. So I put two of those together. Now they're sitting up 3 feet high. So then I have to take two more of these wooden platforms, put them on top of that. Now we're about 6 feet off the ground.
So how is this safe?
Now, well, wait, here's the fun part. I have to take our 20-foot long extension ladder and set it on top of those two platforms.
Oh.
And that is the only way I can get at the light. So I have to climb all the way up that
unsafe.
Just to set a red gel on a light. And it takes 30 minutes because these platforms are so heavy and they got these old legs on them. You got to swing these legs out. You got to lock it in a position. It takes 30 minutes just to set it up to put the ladder up on there.
Guaranteed you're
nice
not.
Shaky ladder.
Their insurance would not want teachers doing this.
No, but it's short of renting a cherry picker and bringing it in, it's the only way I have
to get there
to adjust all the lights and
I'd
set
let
them
those
in place.
Lights be.
Well, we would have a poorly lit musical then.
Yeah.
Wow. But yeah, so I'm exhausted. Yes, that's why I took a quote unquote sick day, mental health day. So there you go. So anyway, we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about Lori Raider Day and her new book, The Lucky One. Laura, what do you have to tell us a little bit about this book?
So I read The Lucky One. Mm-hmm. It's a sinister, exciting novel about a young woman named Alice. She recognizes a man who kidnapped her as a child. She sees him on a website called the Doe Pages. This is a site for the missing and the unidentified that she likes to go on. So Alice was taken when she was very young and then kind of returned. Her sheriff father kind of negotiated the return. It's all very unclear. Her father doesn't like to talk about it. Her mother doesn't talk about it. It's kind of a strange part of her life. And it's really chilling when she sees this man and knows him and then remembers why she knows him.
Wow.
So the post with this man's face gets deleted pretty soon after it's posted, but Alice has already set out. She sets out to try to find him.
Okay.
She's freaked out, understandably. And she works with a community of other women who also work on these Doe Pages, these websites. And it's a dark book, but the other women in this community is kind of a little bit of a more comedic, slightly more comedic, lighthearted kind of gang of sisters that go out and kind of hunt for clues. And it's kind of everything you'd want with like a group of people like searching for somebody.
Awesome.
So Alice meets another woman who's looking for this man also, but she's looking for him for different reasons. And together, along with the other women, they begin to unravel these very dark secrets. It's twisty, it's thrilling, it's a page turner. It's called The Lucky One by Lori Raider Day.
All right, cool. And we had a great time talking to her, so here's that conversation for you right now.
Every breath you take, and every move you make, every bond you break, every step you take, I'll be watching.
Read your new book, The Lucky One, in 2 days. Absolutely loved it. I also really enjoyed Under a Dark Sky, by the way. Really enjoyed it. And The Lucky One features the community of women and some men
who devote time and resources to trying to identify the missing. And one of the women, Alice, sees the photo of a missing man on this website, and she recognizes him as a man who kidnapped her when she was young. And I was wondering, what inspired you to write this story? Because it's a great idea.
Oh, thank you. I actually have a very specific story about this one. My neighbor, I have a brand new neighbor right over there. And I met her for the first time in her backyard over the fence that we share, this terrible fence. We all hate it. Just a low chain link kind of situation. It's been there forever. And she introduced me to her little daughter, who was about 2 years old at the time, and said, oh, her name is Eden. And I had just turned in Under a Dark Sky to my editor, and the main character's name was Eden. And I didn't know any Edens when I turned the book in. And then suddenly I was meeting this little girl, this little innocent girl. And I said, oh, I have to tell you, first time we're meeting, but I have to tell you what I do for a living, because it just became relevant. and then very soon after that, we were talking about this fence, and she said, oh, I hate this fence. I agree. It's terrible. I'm worried that someone's going to just reach over and take Eden. Oh, I felt a little guilty.
That's a strange thing, though, because, you hear about kids going missing and things like that. And a lot of times it's someone they know, and they're returned because it's a custody thing or something like that. And then the ones from a stranger, you feel like are the ones that don't get returned a lot of times. And that's wild that actually did happen to somebody.
Yeah, it was a dark story for her family, but everything was fine. She's an adult. She lives next door. She has two little girls now. They're both fine.
Wow. Okay, that's good. Yeah. That's good.
Because that was a great plot point in your book, and then having her remember little bits of it, and this black, you used the metaphor of blackbird wings. Mm. And that was interesting to me. Why did you pick that particular thing?
So Alice has what she calls migraines, just very sudden sort of fainting spell, headache situations. And she doesn't understand them. But I guess they're sort of like anxiety or panic attacks in some way. She just sort of suddenly can't sort of deal with whatever is happening around her, and she sort of sees them as the wings of a blackbird, flying at her face. It was just an image that came to me early on, and then it had some work to do in the story. But I really wanted them to use the blackbird on the cover, and they didn't.
I know. That would have been awesome.
They gave them so
also
much
quick. I feel like birds sell too, so I like that. Yeah,
I love birds, but then I told somebody that there were crows in this story, blackbirds are crows in the story, and they're like, oh, those are scary. I'm like, oh, I didn't realize there was a subset of humans that would be actually scared of blackbirds.
Well, maybe it's because maybe it's because it's a murder of crows. So that's the first thing that pops into people's head.
Two crows is a murder.
Yeah, it is.
That's really funny. So your book is also it's dedicated to the memory of Frances Annette and Deborah Jean Cole, and I was wondering if you'd like to tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. So along the time I was sort of like, oh, I have to write about, my neighbor's story. What happens is, something occurs to me that sort of just like sparks other memories or other things I have considered writing about. And they just sort of like light up like a little pattern. And then suddenly I can start writing something. When I was about 8 years old, a girl in my neighborhood went missing. Her name was Deborah Jean Cole, and I knew her. I shouldn't have known her. She was 4 years older than I was, but we rode the same school bus, and we did actually have at least one conversation. She helped me plan my 10th or 11th birthday party.
Oh, wow.
I don't know why we were sitting together. We should not have been. To me, it feels like maybe she was, not getting along with the kids her age, that maybe she had pushed forward in the bus by bullying, I guess. And so here she was sitting next to me. It turns out her birthday was right after mine. And so I think in some ways she was planning the party that she wanted. But anyway, she helped me plan my party, what colors I wanted, the shopping list that I would have to take to my parents. And but she disappeared, and it was a, of course, a big thing in our neighborhood. She only lived about 9 feet away from me,
wow.
in this small community in Indiana. And I think I knew that she was gone, but it was sort of the thing that your parents wouldn't talk to you about. So,
wow.
And you'd think it would be all over the news, right? But this was, you know, this was, I don't know, it was 86, 85, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
84. And I should probably look that up. And she was just gone. And we weren't good friends. So it wasn't like a huge loss to my little 8-year-old self, but I was aware of this. And then a couple years later, her sister was found murdered.
Wow. So,
Frances Annette, I believe she
wow.
was. So what I did for this book as part of my research process, it's about online sleuths, the real people who do this kind of, you know, it's like a hobby for them, but it's kind of a profession as well. So I interviewed a lot of people who, a few people who do that kind of work, but I also decided I would go to my hometown and research as best as I could this case from my hometown and see what was reported in the newspaper, for instance, what wasn't reported in the newspaper. As it turns out, as far as I could tell, her disappearance was not noted in our local paper.
Wow, that's so strange.
She was 12, but she was considered a runaway. And so, you know, it wasn't really, you know, all points bulletin, or there was no Amber Alert. There was
before Amber. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then 2 years later, when her sister was discovered murdered, it was a much huger story. Obviously there was a body to contend with, but then also it was immediately apparent that maybe, Deborah had also not just disappeared, that maybe she had been kidnapped or, you know, possibly murdered and dumped somewhere, but not ever found. So when I was starting to think about writing about a website like the Doe Network, I called it the Doe Pages in my book. You know, I spent a lot of time on that website looking to see how things worked and, you know, what kinds of information could be found. And I found Deborah Jean Cole in that site.
Oh, wow.
I knew about her, but I didn't really make that connection that if I went through here, I would actually know a face.
Wow.
And there was her face.
Oh, man.
Wow.
For 12 years old.
That's amazing.
So she has never been found. Obviously, her sister was found dead and has been buried properly, but Deborah Jean has never been found.
That is a strange story, strange and sad. Mm-hmm. And makes me wonder if it's not that strange, if you know what I mean. If it's more common than we know. Yeah.
I think it is more common. And one of the interesting, so I wanted to do the research so that I knew what kinds of information that you could find and how, you know, if I needed more information, where would I go? Who could I ask? But what I really got from doing that research about two girls that were, you know, just like me, a couple houses away, was like this feeling. Whenever I needed to remember what the story was really about, I could go back to the research that I had done about them and remind myself that there were real people who were affected by this kind of story, which I think we can sometimes forget.
Yeah, you really brought that out in your book. And, you know, you used the character of me. She was a delight, and I was really glad I wasn't here. I had lightness in the dark of this situation. And kind of wondered if you worked to balance out your characters' personalities so they're not all, like, grim and determined, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a fun-loving person in real life. I've definitely had people ask me, like, why so dark the stories, Lori? It's like you actually are a funny person. And so I actually like to have, you know, I have not written a humorous mystery here, but I'd like to have characters that have senses of humor. I think most people have a way of, you know, making hard life, happenings okay. And one of those ways is to have fun despite it, or to, you know, to find the humor in the situation, or to, you know, playfully work together with people that they meet. And, Juby especially, I think, is one of those characters where she's there to do the work. She's there to, you know, to do the research, but she's also going to have fun while she's doing it.
Yeah, she is. And then the other woman in the story is Marilee Cruz. She's the alleged kidnapper's stepdaughter. And she also engages in some risky online behavior for money. And you dragged yourself into a tough world already. Did you go into this other world that Marilee Cruz was in, this online doing things for money world? Did you look into that too?
No, I did not look very deeply into that. I just imagined that.
I don't blame you.
Fiction, you know, fiction writer, I get to imagine most of what I think. You know, what was important for me with Marilee is I wanted to give her an online community. You know, Alice has this online community, even though she's just sort of dipping her toe into it. But I wanted to show, you know, there are different kinds of online communities, and some of them want things from you, and some of them take things from you. Mm-hmm. But, you know, she was kind of in control of that situation for the most part. So I think, I didn't do any research for it, but I did want to sort of show a different kind of online community.
Yeah, a little more dangerous. Although the way that you had it was not as unpleasant, I guess, as someone like I would have thought it would be. It was a little, you know, more about being lonely.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that probably is really about being lonely.
Too.
Right? Yeah. And I'm sure there is a disgusting online community for every need out there.
Yeah, for sure.
That I don't want to imagine. In Marilee's case, you know, she's lonely, and then she's sort of seeing herself as a person who can connect with people who are also lonely. They don't actually want a great deal from her. So it seems okay to her until, you know, things happen and she has to make decisions about how deeply she wants to go into this community.
Now, Lori, I see that you're the national president of the Sisters in Crime. Is this now? This sounds like something you might have just made up on the spot. No, I'm kidding.
It's a good party, doesn't
it? It really does. It sounds like some kind of a party game for sure. But it does sound like a lot of fun at the same time. Now, a couple questions: do you have to be a woman, and also do you have to be a sister?
Excellent question. Yes, the national president of Sisters in Crime. It's a one-year gig, three-year commitment, year as president. I'm a long-term member of Sisters in Crime. I joined when I was, you know, before I had a book written, before I needed an agent, before I needed, you know, any of the professional aspects of the group.
And how many crimes did you have to commit before joining the group?
Just a check, really.
Oh, I mean, okay. that's a big enough crime. Right.
So it's about a 4,000 member organization at its highest point in the year, and we have lots of writers, people who want to write, librarians, booksellers, people in the publishing industry. It's mostly about camaraderie and professional development, networking. Having people that you know when you show up to these big mystery conferences.
Right.
It's really fun. You do not have to be a woman.
Okay.
Oh, really? Right. No, I figured you did.
You don't have to be a sister. You could be a sibling.
Okay. But you should have a sister. You should at least have a sister. Let's make that clear right now.
I do have a sister. but you know, if you join the group, you get a whole bunch of sisters.
Oh, how exciting. So, okay.
Hey, you seem really supportive of and involved with helping other writers. I was curious, were you helped along the way? Was that something that someone helped you?
Yeah, absolutely. I got a lot of great, enthusiastic help early on. I actually did a Master of Fine Arts in Creative Writing, which is not the thing that you have to do. It's a thing that you can do. I also didn't realize I was a mystery writer at the time, and maybe if I had known that I was a mystery writer, I wouldn't have gone that route, crime fiction not being the sort of thing that requires an MFA. But I just, you know, I needed to write. I had not been writing for about 5 years, had not done any writing for myself. I had a writing job, which took most of my creative efforts. But a friend of mine had gone through that, a program like that and had been published. And I was just so like, okay, that's a path that I can follow and maybe get serious about this. And really, it was about time. I needed to spend the time. But in that process, I got some great mentors from my faculty, and then, you know, a really tight little community of writers, of other people who were trying to get published. And then when I found out, that I was a mystery reader, yes, I had to be told. I actually showed up at a fellowship program that I'd been invited to, and they had constructed the 9 people into 3 groups, and I was not in the fiction group. I was in the mystery group, which was a surprise to me. I had, as far as I knew, I wasn't writing a mystery, and probably hadn't thought about that as a separate genre in a long time. But it was very eye-opening. Huh. And as soon as I realized, oh, this is a crime book, okay, now I know what I need to do. I need to solve this crime. And I don't know if I would have finished that book if I hadn't been told that it was a crime novel. And then I got a lot of more help from people within the mystery community by joining Sisters in Crime, Mystery Writers of America. I got to meet a ton of other crime writers, which was just fantastic. And one of them would say, oh, well, you should consider going to VoucherCon, which is the big mystery conference once a year. And so I would go there and meet somebody else, and they're like, oh, you should join Sisters in Crime. And so then I did that. And then, I went to a Sisters in Crime meeting, and then I would meet all these people who are like, oh, have you written a query letter? Step by step, I met tons of people who had just a little bit of advice to point me in the next direction.
Well, speaking of that, I know you were down there in Dallas last year. Congratulations. Your book, Under a Dark Sky, won Best Paperback Original. And I saw some pictures with you and Lou Burney together down there. So congratulations for the Anthony Award for that.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. What does that mean, Best Paperback Original?
It's just a format thing. It's interesting. I don't know. It's probably like separating out the best actor and the best actress at the Oscars, right? Making sure that there's a little bit of, I don't know if equality is the right word, but the awards are spread out a little bit. I am still published in paperback original, which I like because it's a cheaper format and people
get more people. Yeah. Books out there. Absolutely. Yeah.
Also my perfect format.
I agree with you.
That's how I like to read, that shape and size.
Yeah.
And then hardcover is for books that I think they can, like the more blockbustery books, so they can sell a lot more copies, perhaps in hardcover, even though it's more expensive. So I've still got the training wheels on, I guess, but I don't mind it. And then the pictures you said with Lou Burney, specifically with Lou Burney, because he and I have the same editor at Harper. And so we took some pictures, just the two of us, to send to her. She wasn't there. Yeah.
So when your editor's not taking your phone calls, you're just like, oh, I'm working with Lou again. I see. Okay.
She takes my phone calls. Don't worry.
Yeah, she's taking Lori Raider Day's phone
calls.
Yeah.
She's talking to Lou. She's probably.
And where's your where's your Anthony Award trophy?
It is on the. There's a little table in front of our TV, and it's sitting right there. It's got a couple of cute neighbors too. There are 3 Anthonys and a Mary Higgins Clark.
Oh yeah, the Mary Higgins Clark Award. That's right.
Yeah, I know. That Mary Higgins Clark Award. The specifics for winning that are so interesting to me. And I read, like you, and she just passed. And I read her growing up. I read her very young. And she was very important to me as a reader. And it's interesting, the specifics, though, because I had no idea you could break it down to it needs to be a young woman and she needs to be working and it's this and that. Did you know that when you were writing your books? Did you think about that formula?
Mary Haynes Clark was definitely very important to me. She was one of the first adult level reading opportunities I had. I sort of discovered her by accident, but I carried her, hardcover library wrapped books on the school bus when I was 11. So yeah, probably way too young for that. But I didn't actually think about the awards or the sort of framework that they use for that one as I was writing. I just wrote, the books. When I wrote my very first book, I had Katrina McPherson, who's a fantastic writer, one of my favorites, read it early on to blurb it, I think. And she said, oh, this is I think she used the phrase Mary Higgins Clark Award catnip, which I'm like, okay, I think I know what you mean, but I don't know what that means. So I looked it up. It's something like, you know, a woman, it's Woman in Jeopardy is mm-hmm. the category Mary Higgins Clark has become famous for. And so that's kind of the category for the award. But she never liked four letter words. You know, she didn't like a lot of swearing being thrown. So that's one of the things that you have to kind of chill out if you want to be considered for the Mary Higgins Clark.
What the fuck is that all about? Jesus.
Well, exactly.
That's bullshit. God's sakes.
I wrote the book, you know, just as I would write it. And then right before it got published, this is The Black Hour, my first book. My dad, he said, oh, I told everybody at church about your book coming out. And I thought, oh, fuck. And so I went back and I had just been given my edits and my editor was like, oh, no, these are fine. And I just went through and I wiggled each.
Oh, wow.
To just make sure it was necessary. And it turns out that none of them were.
Right.
In the Black Hour. Now, since then, I've dropped a couple. Yeah. Sorry, Mary. and it's not a hard and fast rule, by the way. My third book was nominated for the Mary Higgins Clark, and it actually had a couple of F-bombs in it.
Oh, they're slacking over there.
I know. It didn't win, though, so, you know.
Oh, there you go. That's it.
That
explains it. Well, I know one thing that did win is you won a Good Housekeeping. Now, it's funny because you think of these prize winners, people who win prizes for writing short stories, and they don't go on to become successful authors. So I just find it fascinating that you won this what was that like? You know,
Good Housekeeping thing is so funny because it was a huge deal to me at the time. And so it's in my bio, you know, pretty deep, like it has to be like the long biography before you get that anymore. But, but people find it and they're like, what does that mean that you wrote a story that Good Housekeeping, because it's like a magazine that your grandma gets.
I know,
right?
Exactly. Yeah.
But it's kind of a fun magazine. It was a short story contest. They had not had one, I don't think, in their entire existence, but for their 125th anniversary, they decided to have a short fiction contest.
Sure. Good a time as any. Mm-hmm.
Why not? You know, Jodi Picou was the judge and I was not yet a crime writer. So I wrote a short story. It's just women's fiction or, you know, just a mainstream short story. And it won. I think it was 5,000 entries. And I won $3,000.
Wow.
And this is the novel draft. Mm-hmm. You know, it was really
early.
Yeah. So it was a big deal. I was pretty excited.
That's
so my
really
story
exciting.
Appeared in the print issue that Michelle Obama was on the cover of.
Oh, hey, man. There you go.
Right?
So, nicely done. Yeah. Yeah,
well,
I'm sure some
nice.
Eyeballs got
company.
On that half deflated basketball. I wanted to put some cereal and eat it out of a deflated basketball after reading that one.
So Good Housekeeping Magazine, it's sort of like this little joke that people are like, oh, you had a short story. I'm like, Good Housekeeping Magazine has a readership of 26 million people.
Wow.
Worldwide. I will never again have as many readers of anything.
Mm-mm. Wow.
As I
no.
have for that one short story.
Yeah. That's intense. Wow.
It's better if you don't think about it before you.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Don't think about it.
That's really funny.
Very good. Did you watch the Oscars last night? I know I saw you tweeting about the guy. You called him the guy from Space Camp, the Parasite director. He did look like that. And he's staring at his little trophy. Then we were laughing last night watching that one.
I love Space Camp, so this is not a dig. But Joaquin Phoenix, you know, early on when he had his other name, which I can't remember right now. Do you guys remember his first?
Leaf. I don't yet.
Leaf.
Rain. It was Rain. Rain.
Rain? Okay, I was thinking he was Leaf.
Maybe he was. I thought it was Rain. Maybe
it
was Leaf.
One of the daughters.
You're right. You know what? It is Leaf. You're correct. So I had a huge crush on River Phoenix as a teenager.
I mean, we all did, right? I mean, I think I'm the same era here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't watch the whole thing. I watched the very end. So my husband and I were watching Schitt's Creek. Mm-hmm. Just because that's what we wanted to watch. We're a little bit behind on everything pop culture wise. So we're just like in season one, but we were watching a couple episodes of that. And then it ended and we were going to go to bed, but then he was switching through the channels and found the Oscars. I'm like, oh, let's see who won. And it wasn't over yet. Usually it goes so late that I thought I'd already missed it. But Joaquin Phoenix. I have not seen the movie that he won for. Congratulations to him.
Good movie.
I haven't seen Parasite. Congratulations to them.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. What have you seen, Lori? Have you seen any movies?
Anything.
Come on. Lori. You got to get out of the house.
I had a book that I had to write, and it was like shortest timeline I've ever had. It was the hardest book of my life. So this, the one I was writing this past year was the historical that I have coming out probably in 2021. I don't have a title for that yet, but it's a really intense, project that I got from myself. And then I had a really bad year where I lost a lot of writing time to just life. So I haven't seen any of the TV shows that you're thinking of as your favorites. I haven't seen them. none of the movies from the Oscars last night. Nothing. I think I saw that... Hair Love one because it was online, right?
Oh, yeah. Really? Okay.
Yeah.
We saw the preview. Really that did win, and we were like, oh, we got to see that. That one looks good. That's good to know it's online. Yeah. All right. Very good. Well, Lori, listen, we want to thank you so much for joining us and really appreciate you taking a few minutes out of your day to talk to us about The Lucky One and the Oscars and everything else.
Thank you. Thank you. Lori. Have a good day. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
The Inside Chat, and that was our chat with Lori Rader Day.
She's awesome.
She's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I really enjoy talking
to her.
She
is a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like her a lot.
So thank you so much to Lori Rader Day. Check out our episode this weekend coming up where we'll have more book recommendations for you, another author interview, and all kinds of fun stuff. So we thank you very much for listening. My name is Dave Medicus. We'll see you later.
Adios.
Ooh, how exciting.